Welcome into the final episode of the Denver Stiff Show. I am your host, Ryan Blackburn, at NBA Blackburn on Twitter. It is Thursday night as me and my guest, my friend, Zach Mikosh, are currently ruminating over what was a hellscape of a loss, a nightmare of a loss, if you will. I've introduced him already, but for now is Deputy Site Manager Zach Mikosh at the mic. Zach, how are you, first of all, and what can you take away from what we just witnessed?
Well, I'm frustrated, that's for sure. I have a slightly painful foot from kicking over my chair at the end of that game. And there was that's the number one thing I just take. And it's funny because the last game I covered before this one was the last Wizards game, which was also equally as like incredibly frustrating for a little bit different reasons. But still just so many mistakes, so many self-inflicted wounds, in this game tonight that it's just so frustrating. And then there in that last sequence, to see just a complete breakdown, of everything it was just really, really, really frustrating.
Where do you want to start? Because I'm willing to go in a variety of different directions here. Do we want to start with the last play? Just kind of go chronologically.
Yeah, I think we got to start with the last play because it's the thing that's on everybody's mind.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So the Nuggets are in a situation in the fourth quarter with the time running down, where there are very few amount. There's a very little amount of time left after a pretty long situation or a pretty long extended sequence that I was surprised that there was never a timeout called. So from the 1:57 moment onward, Bradley Beal makes a second free throw to extend the Wizards lead to 4. The next possession, Nikola Jokic misses a 2-point shot. Then Russell Westbrook turns the ball over. Then Nikola Jokic finds Michael Porter Jr. for a dunk to cut it to 2 with 1:15 left. Then at that point, the clock doesn't stop again. Jokic blocks a Robin Lopez layup. Jamal Murray goes down, misses a step-back jump shot after Michael Porter Jr. had a wide-open three that he passed up. That was pretty weird. He kicked that out to Jamal Murray. Then Denver plays good defense. Raul Neto gets that last shot with about 5-6 seconds left. Jokic punches the ball out into that front court area, or into the back court area. Jamal Murray catches it on the left wing, dribbles up to that left wing three towards the top of the key. He has three players on the right side of the lane. Michael Porter Jr. fills to the corner. Facundo Campazzo fills to the right wing. And Monte Morris is in the trail position. Jamal Murray kicks it over to Facundo Campazzo for a wide open three that misses, bricks really badly, and the Nuggets lose the game. So I've laid it all out there with the details. What do you think was the moment that you looked for in that final play that you circled that was the problem?
I think the biggest issue is Michael Porter Jr. not going to the basket down there. I'm trying to look this up right now, and I think I don't have time to read through the very legal way that the rule book is written here, but I'm pretty sure. So the first thing I was thinking was like, why didn't they call timeout and advance the ball? But I think because Jokic tapped that rebound, that if they had called timeout once Jamal got the ball, they would not have been able to advance it.
So well, in addition, I think that if you're on a 3-on-1 fast break, that's better than any possible situation that you could get from a half court play, I think, right?
Agreed. Yeah, in a vacuum, but what we saw at the end of the game is an exact reason why you call the timeout, right?
True.
Because you don't
True.
Want this confusion, and because you know, and people not sure what to do, and then you run out of time. But like I said, I'm pretty sure that they would not have been able to advance the ball because Jokic tapped the rebound to Jamal. So with that being said, It's really, to me, it's Michael Porter Jr. Not crashing the basket. And after the game, he said, well, he was confused because he thought Jamal was going to shoot the three. And I get that Jamal did look, because he kind of stepped back. You know, he looked like he was going to drive and then did like a step back and kind of, you know, you figured it's going up. But he didn't, obviously. But even if Jamal is shooting that three, like, it's still on Porter to crash the basket, because if Jamal shoots the three and misses, Porter's going to have the putback to tie the game. So, right. Like, there was really no reason for him or Faku or Monty Morris. Like, nobody goes to the basket. They all just fan out to the three-point line. That's absolutely, in my eyes, where the breakdown happens.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. When you're 3-on-1 like that, really 4-on-1, given the position that Monty Morris was in, the Nuggets have to work for a better shot than a Faku Campazzo 3. Faku finishes the game 1 of 8, 1 of 7 from three. And that's just not the look that you're looking for with the game on the line, in my opinion. That you should be looking for a layup. I think that Porter has, we all know that he has some serious shot selection issues, and just kind of thinking the game from a perspective like that is a tougher situation for him. But it's 5 seconds left. You got to get what you get. You got to understand the situation. You have to know that if you're down by two and you have an open lane to the basket, you should probably be trying to fill the lane. That's my opinion on it. It's not everybody's opinion on it. I've seen people come to his defense that a 44% three-point shooter shouldn't, like from the corner, shouldn't be condemned for not crashing the glass or for not filling the lane properly. No, I disagree with that. I think it doesn't matter the percentage that you're shooting. You have to perform the right basketball play.
44% three-point shooter. Let me tell you how high his percentage is on wide open dunks. Like, much higher than 44%. So, like,
right.
That's I don't really like buy that argument as well. And I don't understand, like, even like, because I've seen the argument, like, well, you know, you should just go for the three and try and win the game and not bother with overtime. I get that a lot more when you're on the road, but the Wizards are on the road on the fourth game of a 4-game road trip. Like, take them to overtime. They're going to be the ones who run out of gas, not you. And so it's just really frustrating that they don't end up just taking the easy bucket. And because that exactly what happens, like, okay, well, it's almost like we got cute, right? And well, let's try and get the three and win this thing in regulation. And you ended up getting, I mean, the pass to Faku was not good. It didn't get to him clean. It bounced right in front of him, so he didn't get a clean catch. And he had to just basically heave that thing because they were pretty much out of time. Like, there's just very, very little to like about the way that was executed. And even if they executed it well, there's very little to like just about the general way it all came to pass. Like, there was a basically a 99% probability of making the basket if you just crashed the rim and Murray passes it to, you know, to Mike for the dunk. Like, that was a guaranteed way to not lose in regulation, and they passed that up to try and, you know, I guess get a three to win it in regulation, and that ends up biting them in the end.
Disappointing play. There's a lot of disappointing parts of this game. I called this a nightmare loss on Twitter, and I stand by that. That if you're in a situation where Murray's playing 42 minutes, Porter's at 41, Jokic is at 38, the three of them combined for, let me just do the quick math here, 76 points, and the Wizards, you see Russell Westbrook go 6 of 17, you should probably win the basketball game. I think that this is a... this is a pretty incriminating loss from the perspective of you had to get this one, given that you had just lost to the Wizards previously. Given that, like, this team is just trying to come up with any momentum that they can possibly get, and this is the one that you drop? Like that's
right.
It was disconcerting, and I'll probably talk about this in a little bit, but the first quarter and just the way that this game opened up, you knew that there was a bad energy in the air. You knew that this game was going to just bite them in the ass, and it really did. There was just a lot of misses, a lot of poor execution, a lot of a lack of focus, if you will. And
oh, yeah.
that's for everybody involved, not just one person.
Oh yeah, because you know you mentioned all those things like you would think, you know, with those guys combining for 76 points with Westbrook going 6 of 17, you would think that would be a Nuggets win. But then when you start looking at some of the other stats of this game, well, they turned over the ball 18 times. They gave up 10 offensive rebounds. They lost the battle in the paint by 12 points. Like a lot of like you were saying, like energy, like hustle, like a lot of just the execution things, the simple execution things, they just did not get right at all in this game, and it killed them time and time again. I mean, the first quarter, they start the first quarter just taking a bunch of jump shots, or they get to the basket and they just inexplicably blow easy layups, like really easy layups. And everybody, I mean, Jokic missed some layups. Barton couldn't hit anything tonight. I mean, Morris had a terrible night. Campazzo, like you said, 1 for 7. I mean, they got nothing outside of their big three, and they didn't have the crisp execution. Otherwise, like, guys have bad shooting nights. That happens. So, like, but when that happens, you can't give up 18 turnovers. You can't give up 10 offensive rebounds. And a lot of those offensive rebounds in the second half, and particularly in the fourth quarter, like, you can't have all of those just mental lapses. Because if you do, you end up dropping a game to the Wizards on your home court. And once again, you know, I mean, the Nuggets have played 500 ball for essentially the whole season, right? Because they're 17-15. Yeah. And this is why, because it's not that they don't have the talent. It's because they continue how many quarters, how many games, how many moments of just inexplicable brain farts do we see this team have? It blows the mind, because they were so, you know, they looked like they had it figured out at the end of last year, and now it's just like it feels like they've taken just such a step back mentally, and that's not what you would expect.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna talk about some of these detailed struggles. Just go player by player. I think it's important to give everybody their own little low light reel, because it wasn't just one person. I want to keep that clear, but there were a lot of players who really struggled tonight, and we want to talk about
it.
And the coach. We'll be right back. All right, back here on the Denver Stiff Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know this is a tough loss for everybody involved. I hustled home to record this one with Zach Mikosh, because I was at the arena, and the energy in that building was just atrocious for most of it. And even still, the Nuggets had their opportunities to pull out a win and really, like, in a game that they didn't deserve to win, clearly, but they still couldn't get it done. Let's go through some of the lowlights here, because I think that, like, Jokic, I think that Jokic had a fine game, but he was also not great.
He disappeared on offense in the second half, and some of that I think was just weird, but you can't, like I was gonna say, it's weird because he just, like, he wasn't getting the ball, and like for any other player on the team, say for maybe Murray, I would be like, well, they got to figure out a better way to incorporate him. Like, nah, this is Nikola Jokic. This is who the offense runs through. This is the clear leader of the team. This is a guy who has become the clear vocal leader of this team as well, and is the definite captain. And like, He if he's not getting the ball, he needs to demand it, and every single person will recognize that they need to get it to him if he demands it, and he just didn't, and that was the thing. I mean, in the third quarter, he sort of disappeared for a big stretch, and when that happened, the Nuggets struggled. So it's and then they end up winning the quarter, because at the end of the quarter, he starts asserting himself and starts scoring again. So I mean, he was probably, it's him or Murray was the best player on the floor tonight, But like he, yeah, that he had his struggles in particular in that second half, and not kind of going back to that old Nikola that we know, where he's just not really being aggressive, and it hurt Denver.
I want to correct you there. Third quarter was one where he actually did take several shots, and he hit three of his threes, like all three of his threes in that quarter. But he only attempted one shot in the fourth quarter, and
that's it. So yeah, it must have been the fourth
quarter. Yeah, that's a problem. Like. And the one that he did attempt, he just kind of went at Robin Lopez. And I thought that Robin Lopez did a great job of impeding him. Robin Lopez, actually the highest plus minus on the team for the Washington Wizards. And there's a reason for that. He did a great job defending Nikola Jokic. And I tend to think that there are connections there for sure. But look, he's 24, 11 and 7. Denver should still be able to find a way to put together wins around that. Let's go to Will Barton. This might have been the worst game of Will Barton's career. And yeah, I don't want to thrash him for that, because like, look, he came off of a loss to his family. Like he's hasn't been great over the course of the last couple weeks, and he's really fallen off, I think, but we just got
a little bit.
Got a call, like we see.
Tweak an ankle.
Yeah, he tweaked an ankle last game. Like he's clearly right. Not all the way there. But what happened on the court today was probably the worst performance of his career in a Nuggets uni.
Yeah, I would agree. And here's the thing, I'm totally very empathetic to having to deal with loss in the family and to being trying to play through being hurt, but like. If it's gonna affect you so bad that like it did tonight, then don't play, man. Like, because you're not helping your team, and I get it. Like they're so banged up right now, but like you can't tell me RJ Hampton couldn't have given you 22 minutes that were better than the 22 minutes that Will Barton gave you. So like if you're not there, then don't play. Like come to coach, be like, coach, I'm hurt. Like I'm still struggling through some stuff right now. Like I need to. I'm not gonna be. I can't be out there and do what's right by your team, because you can't come out there and I mean the game, three turnovers, one for seven shooting. He was just 0 for 5 from three. Like there was just nothing. And a lot of his shots too that he took were just, it was just bad. Just like bad shot selection, just forcing a lot of stuff that didn't need to be forced. There was one three he took, and I want to say maybe it was in the first half, like in the second quarter, where he just. Like there must have been like 20 seconds still on the shot clock, and he just walks right into a three contested from the top of from the top of the 3-point line and shoots it, and it was just that type of night for Will.
Yeah, and I think I'll describe that as a Michael Porter Jr. shot. And,
yeah, exactly.
And like I put up with it with Porter when he makes them. Sometimes he doesn't make them, and he rightly gets criticized, and I do also criticize Porter when he does that too much. But lately he hasn't done that a lot. Barton, like there was nothing going tonight. And I just think that he inserted himself too much into the game and into what they were doing, and nothing that he tried worked on either end. And the fact of the matter is that if you don't have it going on the offensive end, then at least you have to wall up defensively and do the things you're supposed to do on that end. And he was atrocious on that end too. Yeah. One of the reasons why Bradley Beal got going the way that he did was because the Will Barton was guarding him. Like,
oh yeah, Bradley Beal cooked him for sure.
That's an issue. The Nuggets are putting Jamal Murray out there on him, and Jamal Murray did a great job on Bradley Beal. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the only guy I think that did. So there's
Campazzo was all right.
There are a couple times though that Campazzo was fried chicken.
He got beat, yeah.
And that's also an issue. Speaking of fried chicken, Flacco. I know that Zeke got into early foul trouble, and that's the reason why Flacco got on the floor. It was a no-go for me, dog. Like him being on the floor tonight was a pretty large indicator of where the Nuggets are from a health perspective, and he just did not have it.
Yeah, so the issue with Flacco is, as everybody knows, nobody loves Flacco more than I do, at least in terms of Nuggets fans. I won't try and... Trump his mom or something like that. I'm sure she loves Flacco more than I do, but
I don't know.
Flacco, he's just really struggling. He can't shoot, man. Like that's been the issue. Like he just is a complete a complete loss on offense. He plays strong. I think he plays smart defense. He's obviously very strong. He's probably the strongest guy on the team, him or Hartenstein. But Rui Hachimura got him a couple times when he was out there, and he just didn't have, like you said, he didn't have anything going. I 100% agree with the move that Malone made, putting him out there. You're already down two power forwards. You've got the only other power forward outside of Vlatko and Zeke Nagy that you have available to you is, Michael Porter Jr., but the only other guy you have to come off the bench and be a sort of defensive four outside of Vlatko or Nagy is going to be Greg Whittington, who's never played a game in the NBA and probably was out and then miraculously listed as doubtful yesterday and then upgraded to questionable today. Like, you probably didn't have any plans to play Greg Whittington unless you got into an emergency situation. So that's probably where Malone's thinking is there. He's like, all right, I got Nagy in foul trouble right now. I'm going to put in Vlatko, because if Nagy gets into foul trouble and Vlatko gets hurt or something like that happens, like, now I'm putting in Greg Whittington. So I've got to try and preserve Nagy for the second half. But the thing is Malone, and if to be somewhat critical of him, like, he didn't really go back to Nagy in the second half. I mean,
I let me argue that point. Like, because Nagy played 2 minutes in that first half, but he played 13 mm-hmm. in the second half. He had his normal rotation. The problem that you run into with that was that Nagy still finished with two personal fouls. Like, why didn't he play him through the foul trouble, given the fact that he's going to play two separate 12-minute stretches, and that's kind of what the what the thing has been for these past couple of games with the way that the rotation is built. Like, just, he's not going to pick up six fouls in 24 minutes. Just play him.
He picked up two fouls in 2 minutes. So I don't think you can say he's not going to pick up six fouls in 24 minutes. Like,
but he played another 13 in the second half and didn't pick up another one.
He did, but Malone can't be, he's not a fortune teller, right? He's got to take the facts that are in front of him in the moment. And the facts that are in front of the moment is, like, this guy just picked up two fouls in 2 minutes. And I've got two other power forwards basically on the roster right now. Right. So, I get what he did. I guess, like I said, my criticism, though, is, yeah, so if you're going to save him from foul trouble in the first half, then, like, my assumption is you're planning on probably playing him more minutes in the second half, and that's not what he did. He played him, as you said, his normal rotation, and I thought that hurt them, particularly in the fourth quarter. I might have liked to see Zeke Nagy over either Monty Morris or Facundo Campazzo in the closing minutes there, because again they were getting killed on the offensive glass, and that could have helped them there.
Yeah, and given what Nagy just did against the Portland Trailblazers, I was just surprised that he didn't close with them. Like, that I think he earned it. I think he earned the opportunity.
He's got the versatility on defense. Like, we've seen it, man. Like, the guy can guard five through two if he really is, focused and locked in there. I mean, there's probably going to be a lot of two guards who are going to be able to beat him, but he can at least survive as good as Campazzo or Morris could against, Bradley Beal if he got put out on Beal on a switch or something like that. But, like, that's the thing that was really interesting to me is, like, here's a guy who's shown over these past few games that he's really versatile on the defensive end, and he's got the athleticism and the length to really bother some people. And you just don't go with it. I don't know. It didn't make a ton of sense to me, given that, like I said, given that you kind of saved him in the first half by pulling him out. So it was a peculiar choice to say the least.
Yeah, it's just too bad. I thought Monte had a pretty poor game, though the stats, when you look at it, the stats, he's got 12 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, 3 steals, only 2 turnovers, it says, but it felt like each of those was backbreaking, given the way that he was playing and kind of driving into the rim. I thought this was the first night in a while that he played reckless and wild and erratic, and that's an issue when you're looking for stability out there.
Yeah, I think Monty sort of feels like pressure to be more of a scorer right now because the Nuggets are so thin. Which is funny, they're not thin on their scores, They're thin on all their role players and their defensive guys right now. But he was I think he was trying to be more aggressive, and it just didn't work out. I mean, he gets to the free throw line 8 times. He ended up leading the team in free throws, and that's how he gets his 12 points, right? Because he couldn't. He was terrible shooting from the field. But like, so I saw it as like Monty trying to be more of an aggressive, like score first type of player, and that's not his game. That's not who he is, and that's what ends up, I think, getting him into these trouble where he's like, all right, like, you know, you had the 2 turnovers, which, like you said, it felt like it was more, and he just didn't every. It was one of those things where it's like every time he put up a shot, you just were like, man, I it's not gonna go in, and it didn't, and it was really tough to take. And then on defense, he was just as bad as everyone else. I mean, like, and give like. Do take it with in context here. Like, you're playing one of the best backcourts in the league. Like, that, there's no other way to put it. I mean, Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal, that combination is got to be, you know, top 5 backcourt in the league.
Sure.
So I understand these guys struggling to defend those two players, but they you might as well just not have defended at all, which is essentially what they did. And that, and Monty was certainly guilty of that just as much as anyone.
It's too bad. Like, this is, it just certainly feels like the Nuggets really missed an opportunity tonight to get a feel good win, to continue to put separation between themselves and that play in game. They're just in a really rough spot from a consistency perspective. I thought that first quarter was some of the worst basketball I've ever watched.
I saw that you said that you thought it was the worst quarter that you had watched this season, and all I thought to myself was, I was like, did you forget the second quarter of the last time we played this team?
Well, it's not even that. Like sometimes when you feel like everything is going wrong, and it's a spiraling thing. And look, if you go down by 20, then that's fine. The Nuggets should have scored 40 points on this Washington team in that first quarter. It should have been 40-26, 40-20. They missed a major opportunity to get out in front of this Washington team, put the pressure on them. And unfortunately, the Nuggets were playing with that pressure for the entire game. And it sort of felt like the ugly energy was there throughout because they had started so badly. Because everything that, like, they were getting easy shots. There was a missed layup that Will Barton had that bricked so badly that it was like off the side of the backboard when he was had a wide open lane to the rim that I just kind of looked around at other media members around me and was just like, what is going on? It's just such a weird place that this team is at right now. And I can't help but think that, and I've floated this a couple of times, this team is ripe for a trade. This team is ripe for switching things up and trying to figure out a different formula. I don't know what they're going to do, but they have to do something because what they're doing right now is not working. It's not consistent enough.
The problem that they're going to run into on trades is they're not going to want to give up any of obviously Jokic, Murray, or even Porter at this point. I don't think you can. Like, those are the only guys who are doing anything for this team right now. But outside of them, like, nobody's going to give you anything. You're going to have to pay a pick, probably a first rounder, to get off of Gary Harris's contract if you want to do that. You're probably going to have to pay a second rounder to get off of Will Barton. Though I think Will Barton, well, no, he's expiring, but he's got a player option, which I'm sure he's going to take. So, you know, you're probably going to have to pay to get a pick to get off of Will Barton. Monty Morris is probably a guy you could maybe trade, but then, you know,
poison, I mean,
you're
pill.
Going in on, but yeah, but he's got the poison pill. That's right. So he's unmovable. Paul Millsap is unmovable. Even if somebody wanted to trade for him. So, you know, I mean, you're either talking about, well, what can I get for like RJ Hampton? You're not going to trade Zeke Nagy at this point, I don't think. So it's like, what can I get for RJ Hampton? Does anybody have any interest in Bol Bol? Because clearly the Nuggets do not, or clearly at least Michael Malone does not. So what I wonder is, like, unless you're willing to cash out some first round picks in the future, which maybe that's what you got to do to try and fix this right now. But there's just not a ton to like in terms of the players the Nuggets could trade that will get them, I think, any sort of meaningful return.
And the biggest issue with the first round picks is that the 2023 first rounder that they traded for RJ Hampton, it's protected out to 2025. So they can't trade 2023, 2024, 2025. They also can't trade 2022 because then you'd have back-to-back picks that you'd be giving up. They can only trade that 2021 first round pick, which is going to be a pretty good draft, or the next closest pick that they can trade is 2027. And then they can't trade anything after that. So they have two first round picks at their disposal. And are you just going to trade a first round pick along with Gary Harris or Will Barton to get off of a contract? No, I don't think you, I don't think so. I think you're going to try to make a move to win, which means you've got to add other things on top of that. And when you're in that position, like it's just, it's, there's too much. It's too much.
Right. I mean, let's cut to the brass tacks. It means you're adding RJ Hampton. It's the only somewhat attractive asset. I hate calling him asset. It's the only somewhat attractive player, you know, you have that another team can look at and be like, yep, here's a guy who can help us improve, who's got a high ceiling, who could be a really good, you know, long-term, could end up being a star in the league. Like, he's the only guy, but he's such a huge unknown as well that nobody's going to be like, oh yeah, you know, RJ Hampton can be the centerpiece of a star trade as the, you know, the young player coming back. Like, that's not the kind of thing you're talking about getting, you know, you're talking about getting a role player, which and not even like an elite role player. You're just talking about like, hey, can I get a good role player? And I don't know that you need more role players on this team. You need somebody. I mean, Porter's been playing better lately, but you need somebody who wants to play with Jokic and Murray and get them, make it so that they don't have to carry this team every single night. And you need somebody who can play defense, because nobody wants to play defense either. And like, I just don't know. I mean, I as people know, like I'm a big believer in like trying to get Larry Nance on this team, but I don't think you have anything that you could trade to get Cleveland to trade you Larry Nance at this point. So it's like, you know, or the other guys we've talked about, whether it's Harrison Barnes or an Aaron Gordon or anybody like that. Like, I just don't think there's enough assets here to make a type of deal that any one of those type of players that I just mentioned is going to end up on your team. Like, because you could offer some package for any one of those guys, and I guarantee that team's like, yeah, well, if this is what the Nuggets are offering us, I bet you we can find something better. And I guarantee you they can. So it's, you know, like, they feel very stuck to me right now, and I think it's changes might not meaningful changes probably aren't going to happen until the season is over.
I think you're probably right. I think they'll probably try to make a minor move on the fringes, and they have the assets to make a minor move. But
right,
anything major that you're hoping for, that's unless they're willing to give up one or two other first round picks. The only other two first round picks that they have, along with an RJ Hampton or a Zeke Nagy or, God forbid, Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah, say, or you're trading Porter and you're going all in with, you know, trying to find. But there's no. If you're trading Michael Porter Jr., you're trading for a star player, and like that ship has sailed. James Harden has been traded. Like, Jrue Holiday has been traded. Like, all these guys are gone. There is no star. Bradley Beal has been adamant that he does not want to be traded. Like, there is no guy out there right now who's looking to get out of his situation that you could package Michael Porter Jr. for to get in return and make it worth it. Like, it just doesn't exist. So it's, like I said, they feel very stuck.
Could use a Jeremy Grant right now.
You sure could. And to their credit, they tried. I mean, they certainly tried. And really, I think a lot of the season struggles come back to that, to Jeremy Grant leaving to go to Detroit, because he was so perfect, and everything that they had learned in the bubble that had helped them get to the Western Conference Finals, that had sort of made them into a whole unit, really, really was pinned on the hopes that you're getting Jeremy Grant back, because he's the perfect guy to play next to Michael Porter Jr. and Nikola Jokic in the starting lineup. And when you lost him, there was not another answer. I mean, JaMychal Green has been solid at times, not so solid other times. Now he's hurt, but he's not the same type of player as Jeremy Grant. He's not like, and without that versatile forward who can both play the four and space the floor as the four, but also can be switched onto threes and even twos to bother them as a defender. Like, without that guy, they don't. It's just a huge, huge hole, and it seems like it really makes the rest of it difficult to work to you, to where you get at this point where it's like, okay, we're back to just basically relying on Jokic and Murray to do everything and hoping we're gonna beat teams 120-115.
Let's take a break. When we come back after that big old downer, we're gonna talk about the Denver Stiff Show as a whole and some of the plans that we have with this particular podcasting platform. Nothing is totally finalized yet, but that we're trending towards some decisions. And we're gonna talk about some big picture stuff. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Denver Stiff Show, final segment here. And there is some finality to it, Zach. I wanted to have you on, and I think that you also wanted to be on, because I think that there is some logic to having the deputy site manager on for the end of the Denver Stiff Show.
Well, when I was telling you, I was like, yeah, I really feel like it should be me and you doing this show to finish. I think it's just, in a lot of ways, you know, when I look at what each site manager, like the sort of the stamp that they've put on this site, you know, obviously Andy Feinstein founded it. Nate Timmons sort of brought legitimacy to it by getting the staff credentialed and making it like an actual Nuggets beat. Adam Maras sort of took it to the next level and made it a content machine, and really kind of and sort of a cultural more than just the beat, and making it a really cultural thing. And I've really felt like, you know, your big stamp on this was like you took the podcasting to the next level, and you made the podcast network a thing. Versus, you know, before we had the Pickaxe, and we had Adam was doing Locked On, but it was like, you know, I was doing Pickaxe for Dash Radio. Adam was doing Locked On Nuggets. Then you started doing Nuggets Numbers and adding that in, and it was all kind of just like discombobulated. And you really brought everything together and made it a true podcast network here on the Stiffs. And the Denver Stiff Show has, you know, has just been, that was the show that was like, all right, this is just, in a lot of ways, I felt like took kind of the place of the Pickaxe of being like the Stiffs show for all the Stiffs to kind of get together and have different voices on there. And so it felt like, all right, if this is going to be at least the last of these shows in this type of format, that it really should be, you know, you and I, because it's been sort of, and more so you than me by far, but it's sort of been our baby, right? Like our kind right. of our I guess crowning achievement of our past couple of years here. So I wouldn't have it any other way.
I really enjoyed it, and one of the goals that I had with the podcast network in general was I knew that we had a really strong writing base, and we carried that over from what Adam did. And what Adam did for the site was really to give us a great writing voice and really to help every writer expand their voice in a written medium. I wanted to expand it from an audio medium, from an ability to have people interact with their audience a little bit more, have people get to know each of the podcast hosts, each of the guests, each of the Stiffs, just a little bit more. And I think that we've done that pretty well. For those that don't know, I took over for the site a couple of seasons ago, the 2019-2020 season. It's time is just a construct at this point, given what we've been going through. But towards the end of 2019, about September or so, was when I took over. And one of the things that I really wanted to do heading into that season was come up with a setting of podcasts that we would all be able to share, and everybody would be connected that way by each writer sharing their own unique perspective, each writer sharing their own voice. And I think that we accomplished that. We started off with the Pickaxe on Mondays. That's been always been our opening and leading show, and always will be. Tuesday was Nuggets Numbers. Wednesday was the Dig. Thursdays we kind of played around with, but this season it's been Garbage Takes kind of in and out of there. And I think Jenna's done a really good job with that, and we have a lot of fun with that particular show. And then Friday was the capper with the Denver Stiff Show, and we were able to all come together. And it was, like you said, it was kind of a congregation of everything Denver Stiffs that I think that we prided ourselves on. So it's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed the camaraderie with the group that came from the podcasting and came from the podcast network in general. And I think that we all connected really well on this medium.
Agreed. I think it's been... I think it's just been it's been really fun to do, and I was really proud of the uniqueness of the voices, you know, that we've been able to find. I mean, you know, now with Chicken Nuggets coming on and being sort of now an official part of the network as well, like, it's, you know, I can't think of another Nuggets podcast that is all female voice. You know, that's something that has been is extremely unique, and I think it's really, it's been a really a great show to listen to, and a really great way to get a different perspective that you maybe don't, that we don't get enough in sports. So it's across the board, and just the diversity of the shows too. You know, we had Nuggets Numbers, which was more analytical, and we had the Dig was just kind of wacky in its own way, but the production was really, really good, and you know, and then on Mondays, me and Gordon would just basically write rundowns that we never would stick to, and it really became so many, and so many of these podcasts have become that way, though, where it's not even really like about a rundown or an agenda or anything like that. It's just like it's some friends getting together to talk about the Nuggets, and I think that's really cool, and I think that's what makes podcasts genuine and makes them enjoyable to listen to, and I really feel like we did a good job of that with the network.
Getting to know the staff for more than just the basketball, but for their voices, for their interests, for their passions. A lot of us were connected by our passion and fandom for the Nuggets, but more than that, it's developed into friendship and an ability to really understand each other through that media and be able to communicate with each other no matter what. It was one of the best decisions I think I made in terms of site management. Because I thought the camaraderie and the ability to really hear each other versus just talking to each other via Slack or kind of just watching what each other did from afar, I thought that this was a good way to get everybody connected, and I think we're gonna miss that from the Nuggets Numbers and Denver Stiff Show perspective. Still unclear what the rest of the network is going to do, but we're going to evolve. We're going to try to figure that out as best as we can. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next.
Yeah. And just to be clear, everyone, the podcast network is not going away. It is just, we are going to, we're just going to go through some changes. You know, there's going to be some changes coming up here in the next month or so. And it's going to, the landscape of Stiffs is going to shift a little bit, and it's going to be an opportunity for some new people to get, to really get more involved, and particularly on the podcast network. I think that's going to be a chance for some of our newer staff members, and by newer I mean people who have been here for 2 years now, because we pretty much everybody on staff has been here that long, so
sure,
or longer. So it's all people that everyone recognizes, but you know, it's for up until this point, the podcast network has really been, you know, you, me, Gordon one day a week, Jenna one day a week, and that's pretty much been it. It's just, and there's so many more people involved with Stiffs than just the four of us that I think it's going to be a really, really good opportunity for a lot of other people to get a chance to kind of spread their wings and start something with a podcast, just like we did. I mean, when we both started our podcast, whether it was the Pickaxe or Nuggets Numbers, like, we just did it. We just did it because we wanted to do it, and there was nobody to tell us not to. And I think that has some great things have come from that. And so I'm excited to see what kind of this next group can do, because there's a ton of talent in this group of Red Stiffs. There really is, and I think they're just beginning to sort of tap into their potential. And podcasting is such a big part of media these days that it's, like I said, it's going to be very exciting, I think, and really a good thing overall to see what this kind of next group can do with the network.
Not to toot our horn a little bit, but we get a lot of clicks, we get a lot of listens, and we have a pretty large audience that has really attached to our group, that is really attached to the podcasting that we've done. And fortunately, it's given me an opportunity to expand to a 5 day a week thing over partnering with Mile High Sports. And I'm excited about that. Gonna do Pickaxe and Roll over there. And that should be a pretty interesting pod. I'm looking forward to the experience with that. But like you said, more importantly, the growth opportunity that we have here is a lot. There's going to be a lot of interesting things that are happening, and I can't wait to see what we have in store. I'm looking forward to it, man. It's been a great run with this group, and I've been very happy to see how it's panned out over the course of these last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's your crowning achievement thus far We're talking like you're not going to be the site manager anymore. Which is not the case
I will
at all.
Still be the site manager, and I don't plan on leaving anytime soon, folks. So just to make that clear, my responsibilities are shifting a little bit, and probably for the better. But site management of Denver Stiffs, that still falls with me.
There you go. So please direct all your complaints to at NBA Blackburn.
I'm sure there are a lot of them, so it's okay.
Still the man for those.
Oh, that is very, very true. Anything else that you have before we get out of here?
No, I mean, like I said, it's been a heck of a ride. I'm really, really excited to see what happens in the future with this group. And yeah, all good things.
Awesome, man. Thank you for coming on. Everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in to the final episode of the Denver Stiff Show. Really appreciate you all. Thank you so much. Make sure to leave a nice rating, review, and subscribe to this particular podcast if you're so inclined. If not, if you're interested, go subscribe to Pickaxe and Roll, because that's where you're going to hear me from now on. This is the last minute of time you'll hear from me on this particular network, I believe. But That may not be the case. We'll see what happens there from this point on. But he is Zach Mikosh, at Zach Mikosh on Twitter. Make sure to go follow him. Go bother him with all your concerns, actually. That's much better. I prefer that a lot more. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you guys very soon.